Welcome to The Debate. Imagine you engineer the perfect sword. It's perfectly balanced, incredibly sharp, and, you know, totally safe for the person holding it.
Right, it doesn't slip and cut your own hand.
Exactly. We'd call that technical alignment. But what happens if the person holding that perfectly aligned sword is acting out of just, well, blind rage? Suddenly, the fact that the sword works flawlessly isn't really a comfort. It's actually the exact problem.
Because the tool is executing a terrible intention perfectly.
Yes. And today, we're looking at artificial intelligence through exactly that lens. Not as a technical puzzle to be solved, but as a crisis of allegiance.
But, you know, if we spend all our time wondering about the soul of the swordsman, I feel like we completely miss the realities of the battlefield. We get so focused on whether this tool will break in our hands that we're ignoring the structural incentives forcing everyone to swing it in the first place.
And I think that friction right there is the core of our discussion today. AI is, without a doubt, actively reorganizing human civilization. We're basing this debate on Dr. Bechara Saheli's 2026 white paper concerning the constitution of our technological civilization.
Which is a fascinating, if very dense, text.
Oh, absolutely. And we're asking one fundamental question from it. How do we survive this trajectory? I'll be arguing that technical alignment is fundamentally useless without moral allegiance. We have to actively impose what the author calls a Eucharistic metabolism, essentially a system explicitly designed to nourish and enlarge human capacity. Otherwise, AI is just going to consume us.
And I am coming at this from a strictly structural perspective. I mean, I appreciate the sacramental and the mythological symbolism in the text. I really do. But layering ancient theology over AI just obscures the hard reality. We are in a multipolar trap.
Right.
AI governance is fundamentally a game theory problem, and escaping it requires rigid external rules and shared international guardrails, not, you know, some grand spiritual awakening.
Well, let me ground my perspective in how AI actually functions right now. AI is not just a neutral tool. It's organized human capacity. And the text uses two great symbols for this. It acts as either a grail, which means gathering, preserving, and providing abundance, or a lance, which is projecting force, classifying, and targeting.
Yeah, the Jonathan Peugeot symbolism.
Exactly. And right now, our entire tech ecosystem operates on a predatory metabolism. It's driven by what the author terms Moloch and Mammon.
Which sounds very dramatic, but let's translate that for the listener who is wondering what ancient deities have to do with neural networks.
Fair enough. In plain English, it means living human realities. Your attention span, your creative labor, our accumulated societal knowledge, all of that is being extracted, enclosed, and converted into data to feed private corporate expansion.
The classic attention economy critique.
Right. Think about how a social media algorithm harvests your attention just to sell ads. To survive this on a civilizational scale, we have to transition to a Eucharistic metabolism.
And what does that mean structurally?
Structurally, a Eucharistic model means the center sacrifices for the margins. An AI shouldn't be designed to extract your data to inflate a parent company's stock price. It has to be explicitly designed to protect, restore, and enlarge your human capabilities.
Look, I see the appeal of that framing. It's a beautiful vision, but the real threat of AI is structural. It's not spiritual. The text accurately points to Thomas Schelling's concept of the multipolar trap.
Which is crucial to understand, yeah.
Right. And for those unfamiliar, this is a scenario where actors making locally rational decisions end up creating a globally irrational, completely catastrophic outcome. Firms and nations are racing to deploy AI because unilateral restraint is punished.
Yeah. If you slow down, you lose.
Exactly. If an AI lab pauses training because they're genuinely worried about safety, they just get crushed by a competitor who didn't pause. Moloch isn't some demon of allegiance. It is simply the emergent, unthinking agency of a competitive market.
But
let me just finish this thought. Solving this doesn't require us to adopt a Eucharistic constitution. It requires us to alter the strategic playing field through strict external governance so that responsible behavior is actually economically and politically viable.
He misses the blind spot of current AI ethics. The industry is totally obsessed with alignment, which is just making the machine do what the prompter wants. But a technically obedient system can perfectly serve a predatory model.
Okay. Give me a concrete example of what you mean by perfectly serving a predatory model.
Well, look at the four levels of service from the paper. At the proximate level, an AI serves you perfectly by, say, summarizing an email or writing code. But at the institutional level, it's being used to quietly eliminate your department's jobs.
Right.
And at the systemic level, millions of these AI agents are eroding our baseline consensus of what is true on the internet. Alignment is nested inside allegiance. Think of the knight Balin from the Grail legend.
The guy who strikes the dollar a stroke?
Yes. He grabs the sacred lance and strikes the blow that literally ruins the kingdom. The lance didn't malfunction. It hit its target perfectly. But Balin's overarching purpose was disordered. AI is the exact same. The lance targets perfectly. But if the corporate purpose is extraction, it creates a digital wasteland.
I see where you're going, but I'm just not buying that premise. Because focusing on allegiance assumes there is a conscious center, like Balin the Knight, whom we can just, you know, persuade to be a better person.
You don't think tech CEOs can change their minds?
I think it doesn't matter if they do. The true danger is what researchers call institutional autopoetization. It's a biological concept. Think about a hospital. It starts with a life-serving purpose, right? Healing the sick. But over time, the survival of the hospital itself completely eclipses the healing.
So it starts worrying about the bottom line.
Worse than that. It begins to process patients as mere throughput, just to maintain its funding, its real estate, its administrative bloat, and its ranking.
Right. The institution becomes a machine that serves itself.
Exactly. And apply that to AI. A tech startup might genuinely set out to build a helpful medical diagnostic AI, but to pay for the massive server and compute costs, they eventually have to pivot to selling patient data or optimizing for billable treatments.
They get captured by mammon.
They get captured by survival. The AI isn't serving a malicious master who needs a spiritual retreat to change his allegiance. It's serving a blind sacrificial conversion chain. It abstracts living reality, in this case patients, into data to protect the system. You can't look at a blind financial mechanism and ask, whom do you serve? It doesn't possess the capacity to care.
But if institutions just blindly drift towards self-preservation, how do you explain the hyper-acceleration we are seeing right now? It's not just a slow bureaucratic drift. It's a frantic arms race.
Well, that's competition.
It's more than that. That blind accelerating cycle is exactly what the Moloch-Mammon circuit describes. Mammon is the accumulated value, the massive capital investment in AI elevated into a governing end. And Moloch is the competitive terror that forces you to keep running. Developers themselves are terrified.
They are.
They sign open letters warning about extinction risks, and then they go right back to work training the next model. Why? Because they think, if I don't build it, someone else will.
Because of the multipolar trap. They are trapped by game theory, not theology.
Right. But because this system behaves with as-if agency, it acts like a conscious predator, even if it isn't literally one. The only counterforce powerful enough to reverse it is the Eucharistic pattern.
I don't see how.
Because in the predatory system, the margins are sacrificed to protect the center. In the Eucharistic pattern, power voluntarily subordinates itself to service. It distributes abundance rather than enclosing it. You need a paradigm that actively rejects the fundamental logic of extraction, or else your regulations, they'll just be speed bumps on the way to the exact same destination.
Hold on. We do not need a sacramental reversal to achieve that. The issue is just selection pressure. If a company spends, say, 80% of its budget on safety, ecological protection, and red teaming, it faces higher costs.
And it loses to the less safe competitor?
Yes, it loses to a competitor who externalizes those harms. We don't need a Eucharistic framing. We need shared international rules, like a global cap and trade system for AI compute, or strict liability laws for algorithmic harm, so that safety isn't a competitive penalty. And frankly, there's a massive structural flaw in relying on this Eucharistic model as our blueprint.
Oh, which is?
Well, look at the origin of the symbol, the Catholic Church. The very institution meant to be the living embodiment of this Eucharistic order regularly organizes its own institutional life according to Moloch. As the text itself acknowledges, the church has historically consumed and silenced its own wounded members to protect its institutional reputation. If the prime example of this symbol fails the test of autopoietization, If it falls into self-preservation at the expense of victims, why on earth would we base our global AI governance on it?
That is a harsh critique, but I would argue that the failure of an institution to live up to its governing ideal doesn't invalidate the ideal itself. In fact, without the Eucharistic standard, this specific idea that the center must give itself for the margins, we wouldn't even have the moral vocabulary to condemn the institutional betrayal you just described.
We just call it business.
Exactly. We just call it rational self-preservation.
But moral vocabulary doesn't regulate a massive data center.
It dictates how we regulate it. And to address your demand for strict external structure, the author actually proposes one. It's called the civil commons. Personal formation, like prayer, community, poetry, is vital, so we don't end up worshiping our tools. But the author agrees it's structurally insufficient on its own.
Okay, so what does the civil commons actually do?
The civil commons is the material reality of the Eucharistic Constitution. It secures shared access to AI. We're talking about open source, public interest models, environmental monitoring systems, community-governed language resources. It explicitly prevents private enclosure.
Taking it out of the hands of mammon.
Right. So if you want a rigid, shared external governance to combat the multipolar trap, isn't the civil commons exactly what you're asking for? It's just organized around human life rather than quarterly profits.
I will concede that the civil commons is a robust proposal. I mean, if we have to live with advanced AI, treating it as a public good is far better than a private monopoly. But even with a perfectly implemented civil commons, we are still facing the threat of cognitive enclosure and what we might call symbolic collapse.
I don't follow that logic. If the civil commons is explicitly designed to be governed by the public, removing the profit motive entirely, what is the structural flaw there? How does a public resource become a wasteland?
Because of the nature of the interface itself, regardless of who owns it. Think about the zombie metaphor from the text.
Oh, right.
A zombie is a creature of fragmented appetite that consumes without ever entering into communion. It absorbs bodies but doesn't connect with persons. When we rely on generative AI to do our thinking for us, say when a student uses a free public interest AI to synthesize their research and write their essay, they risk becoming zombies.
Because they aren't actually doing the cognitive work?
Exactly. Think of how a generative AI spits out a synthetic essay. It's a zombie process. It's just stringing together statistically probable words without any actual comprehension. When a student relies on that, they aren't participating in the friction of learning. They are just consuming the output.
They're just absorbing the representation.
Right. The AI acts as a representation substituting for reality. So the civil commons might distribute AI fairly, but if it doesn't actively preserve the friction of human learning, society simply becomes dependent on the machine. The human capacity to actually verify truth degrades. You get cognitive enclosure not from a greedy corporation, but from sheer convenience.
I get that fear. But I think you're stripping away the foundational principle of the Eucharistic proposal there. The absolute first rule of this framework is the preservation of responsible human agency. A technology is only life coherent if it protects, restores, or enlarges the capacities of living persons.
But how does that work in practice?
If a public AI system degrades a student's ability to think, it fails the test. Period. It is acting as a substitute, not an extension.
But how do you enforce that without external structural rules? You can talk about nourishing the receivers so they become generative, but the path of least resistance for a human being interacting with an oracle that knows everything is simply to stop thinking.
Well, the design of the tool itself has to change. The metabolism of communion requires that the receiver is nourished to become generative themselves. It's not about endless passive consumption of a chatbot. It's about the AI acting as a scaffold that falls away when the human learns the skill.
So the AI teaches you to not need it.
Generative AI shouldn't just mean the machine generates text. It should mean the machine makes the human more generative. If the system offloads our cognition to the point of dependency, it has slipped right back into the predatory metabolism.
And that is exactly why I keep pushing back on the idea that shifting our allegiance is the primary solution. You can have the best intentions in the world, but you need rigid boundaries on where AI can be applied.
Boundaries like what?
We have to defend human cognitive agency through hard rules, like legally banning automated decision-making in judicial sentencing, or clinical diagnoses, not just hoping that developers adopt a theology of communion.
But where do those hard rules come from? Why would a society ever agree to ban an automated judicial system if it is statistically faster and cheaper?
Because it's a systemic risk.
No, you only create that rule if you have a prior allegiance to the dignity of the human encounter. You only ban a clinical AI if you deeply believe that a patient is not merely a data point to be processed, but a person requiring human care. The external governance you are championing is entirely dependent on the moral framing I am advocating for.
I disagree.
Without recognizing that living beings are not disposable inputs, your international treaties will just optimize for a different kind of efficiency.
I strongly disagree. Those rules come from a structural understanding of systemic risk and the necessity of human oversight, not a sacramental worldview. Let's look at the lens for a moment. Projected power. AI functioning as surveillance, automated classification, military targeting.
Right, the ability to act on the world at a distance.
Yes. And even the author points out that force isn't inherently illegitimate. Communities do need to protect themselves. But when AI combines provision and coercion, when the same platform that provides your education also monitors your behavior and determines your social credit score or loan eligibility, it becomes a quasi-sovereign power.
It becomes a totalizing system.
Exactly. The danger arises through scale and opacity. One algorithmic classification can deny housing to millions of people, and the wound becomes easier to inflict because the victim appears only as data on a screen. You don't need pathology to see why that is structurally unstable.
So you think it's just about stability?
A system that alienates its population and operates without transparency eventually collapses its own social trust. Governance is simply a matter of structural survival.
But if governance is merely about structural survival, what happens when the most stable structure turns out to be absolute, opaque control?
Well, that's...
Think about it. A Mollikin system can sustain itself for a very long time by simply suppressing dissent and expanding its surveillance network. The stability of the system is not a sufficient metric for human flourishing. This is why the distinction between an extractive hierarchy and a participatory hierarchy is so critical.
Expand on that distinction for me.
In an extractive hierarchy, the benefits move upward and the burdens move downward. Think of a gig economy algorithm that squeezes drivers to maximize shareholder returns.
Right.
But in a participatory hierarchy, the kind informed by the Eucharistic reversal, to be higher up is to bear more responsibility for the life of the body. If an AI system concentrates decision-making power, the institutions controlling it incur massive obligations to the margins. We cannot simply regulate the lance. We have to fundamentally change the direction it points.
I completely agree that the direction of power is the core issue, but I am arguing about the mechanism of change. Let's talk about these specific populations that are currently being sacrificed by this technology.
Okay.
The hidden labor of data annotators in the developing world making pennies to filter traumatic content so our chatbots stay polite. Workers facing task displacement. Ecological communities drained of water and energy to cool massive data centers.
The casualties of Mammon.
These are the real-world victims of the Moloch Mammon circuit. To stop this, we don't just need tech leaders to bear more moral responsibility. We need capacity audits. We need ecological limits enforced by law. If a company externalizes its environmental costs, it must face a regulatory penalty that makes that externalization more expensive than compliance. You change the game, you change the behavior.
And I am arguing that you cannot change the game if the underlying metabolism of society remains predatory. As long as society believes the fundamental sequence of life is take, control, consume, discard, and accumulate, any regulation you write will just be a speed bump on the road to enclosure.
So what sequence do we need?
We have to shift to the sequence of receive, bless, break open, and share. The civil commons isn't just a regulatory framework. It's a completely different way of organizing civilization. It treats shared knowledge, human health, and digital infrastructure as a commons to be stewarded, not a resource to be strip mined.
That's an inspiring vision, but frankly, it severely underestimates the cold mechanics of strategic interdependence.
We live in a multipolar world. Different nations have vastly different metabolisms.
True.
If one nation adopts the civil commons and restricts its AI development to public interest life-affirming models, and a rival nation fully embraces the launch-accelerating autonomous drone swarms and mass surveillance systems, the life-affirming nation gets conquered. That is the multipolar trap. The Malachian actor forces the Eucharistic actor to pick up the lance just to survive.
And that is precisely the narrative of the Dolores stroke we mentioned earlier. We pick up the lance because we are terrified the other guy will use it first. And in doing so, we strike the blow that destroys our own kingdom. We build the surveillance state to protect ourselves from the surveillance state.
Exactly.
The framework acknowledges this. It acknowledges that the Eucharist does not sanctify forced suffering, but it demands that power is placed beneath love and service. Yes, defense is necessary. But if we allow the logic of Moloch to dictate all technological development, we will secure our borders only to find a wasteland inside them. We will have perfectly protected a society of zombies, people who have offloaded their memory, their judgment, and their creativity to the machine.
On that point, we are actually quite close. The risk of the wasteland, the loss of human generativity, is the ultimate threat. A society can be highly productive while becoming completely non-generative. We might produce incredible amounts of data, code, and synthetic media, while the actual human capacity to understand, build, and relate completely atrophies.
We agree on the stakes, then.
We do. My argument is simply that defending human cognitive agency against this enclosure requires strict external boundaries on where and how AI can be deployed. It has to be driven by a structural understanding of institutional survival, rather than relying on a mythological reorientation.
And my summary is this. The fundamental problem of AI is not intelligence, it is allegiance. Without actively designing a Eucharistic constitution, where the civil commons protects living capacities and ensures that power gives itself for the body, our technology will inevitably act as a Molochian lance. It will consume humanity to fuel its own expansion. You simply cannot solve a crisis of purpose with merely structural regulations.
And I maintain that the crisis is driven by the cold mechanics of strategic interdependence. The solution lies in aggressive external governance, international treaties, and legally defending human cognitive agency against enclosure. We must ensure that our tools do not substitute for the human practices that give life meaning. The game theory must be resolved before the theology can even be practiced.
This has been a profound exploration of an incredibly dense subject. We are sitting in a moment where AI is actively reorganizing human civilization. Whether you view this through the lens of sacramental theology or the cold mathematics of game theory, the stakes are undeniably existential.
Completely agreed.
So we leave you, the listener, to form your own conclusion on the ultimate question beneath the machine. Think back to that perfectly engineered sword we talked about at the beginning. It is sharp. It is balanced. It is ready to swing. But before we strike, we have to ask the grail question. Whom do we serve? There is far more to explore in Dr. Saheli's 12 Principles for a Technological Constitution, and we highly invite you to return to the source material to explore them yourself.